receives a word of praise from a top Iranian military commander for naval forces who blocked the U.S. from stealing Iranian oil in the Sea of Oman. The U.N. General Assembly Committee approves several resolutions against Israel over its violation of Palestinian rights despite U.S. objections. And Canada's dark past rearing its head again. A new search begins for unmarked graves of Indigenous children at a former residential school. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour, the chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has hailed forces for foiling a recent attempt by U.S. forces to seize a tanker that was carrying Iranian oil in the Sea of Oman. Major General Hossein Salami thanked the Iranian forces for taking such a wise reaction, adding that Navy forces proved that they were prepared for any action on the part of the U.S. Salami noted that the IRGC had rather predicted the U.S. move, making it act with optimum preparedness against American forces. The IRGC official added that the encounter indicated that the Iranian people cannot be defeated. On October the 25th, the IRGC carried out a heliborne operation and secured the tanker. Naval forces then proceeded to steer the shipment to Iran's territorial waters. The vessel is now released following a court order. Iran is warning that the growing presence of terrorist groups in Afghanistan could be another trap set for the region by the occupying forces. Secretary of the Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, also says there's a threat of a sectarian war erupting in Afghanistan as a result of foreign plots. He recalled years of what he called Washington's fruitless military presence in the country. The official said the U.S. and its allies should take responsibility for inflicting heavy human and financial losses on the nation. He also renewed calls for the formation of an inclusive Afghan government. Shamkhani made the comments in an address to a regional summit in New Delhi hours ago. Representatives from other regional states are also present in the Indian capital. The summit was initiated by Iran in 2018. U.S. President Joe Biden has signed an executive order extending the National Emergency Act with respect to Iran. Biden says the measures adopted in the act must continue for one more year because U.S. relations with Iran have not yet normalized. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter declared the emergency in 1979. That happened after Iranian students took over the American embassy in Tehran, accusing its staff of seeking to topple the nascent government. The two countries have had no diplomatic relations for more than four decades. Trump quit the Iran nuclear deal 3 years ago. Now Biden says he's seeking diplomacy with Iran, and six rounds of talks have already been held on the deal in Vienna. Iran is demanding guarantees that sanctions will be removed and that the U.S. will not break the deal's terms again, but so far no commitments from Washington. We heard from political commentator Mohammad Marandi earlier that what the U.S. president did with regards to the Anti-Iran Act is fairly predictable if we consider how Washington has been conspiring against Iran over the past decades.
It was expected, but it reflects the state of affairs between Iran and the United States from a historical perspective. The whole standoff between Iran and the United States began after the United States overthrew the national government of Iran and installed the Shah, created the Savak, the ruthless intelligence organization that the Shah used to suppress the Iranian people. The United States supported the Shah when he was gunning people down on the streets during the revolution. And after the revolution, the U.S. Embassy was the center for conspiring against the new government in order to overthrow the new government and to reverse the gains of the Iranian people. They were cooperating with elements within the military, the former political class. They were working with people who were among the military, the revolutionaries, and many of the militias, including organizations such as the MEK that were, according to American law, terrorists, because they had killed Americans before. But they were working with separatist groups, terrorist organizations, the military, all to conspire against Iran.
The United Nations Committee has condemned Israeli atrocities against the Palestinian people and adopted 6 resolutions against the regime's actions. The panel slammed Israel for its systematic violation of the Palestinians' rights. It also condemned the use of force against Palestinians, especially those in the Gaza Strip, which has resulted in civilian casualties. The committee also condemned the regime's blockade of the Gaza Strip and its settlement activities on occupied land. It further condemned Israeli settlers' provocative actions against Palestinians. The committee also denounced the regime's home demolitions and its arbitrary arrests and imprisonment of Palestinians. The resolutions were adopted despite opposition from the U.S., Canada, and Israel. Political analyst Jeff Aramini tells us that for 7 decades, Israel has been committing all sorts of atrocities against Palestinians, knowing that it will never be prosecuted. Take a listen, please.
We are grateful for anything or anybody that stands for the Palestinian rights, because Israel, for the last 73 years, has been committing all sorts of atrocities against us, the Palestinians, knowing full well and in comfort that they will never be sanctioned for it. How many resolutions did the United Nations pass? Many, tens, 75 or more. Nothing has been implemented, and applies the siege on Gaza from air, sea, and land, does not allow food and medicine to go into Gaza, pollutes the water aquifers in Gaza, so there is no drinking water. And the world says Israel has the right to defend itself. And Israel, periodically since 2008, has been attacking Gaza with devastating force.
Bahrain's main opposition group is very concerned about the fate of political prisoners in the country, saying even seriously ill inmates are being denied access to essential and adequate medical services. The Al-Wafaq National Islamic Society is demanding the immediate and unconditional release of some inmates from the notorious Qurayn military prison. Al-Wafaq is asking international rights groups to visit the jail and see the conditions for themselves. Reports coming out of the prison suggest that inmates there are showing symptoms similar to those of COVID. There are also reports of a skin condition known as scabies spreading fast. Still, those affected are being held in solitary confinement. One inmate has been on hunger strike to protest lack of access to medical treatment. Rights organizations have criticized Bahrain over overcrowding, poor sanitation, and lack of medical care in its jails. China says the United States needs to stop all forms of official interaction with Taiwan and should do that immediately. A delegation of U.S. lawmakers is currently visiting Taiwan. China's foreign ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin says the move violates the One China policy. Under that policy, nearly all countries, including the U.S., recognize Beijing's sovereignty over Taipei. China's defense ministry has also reacted, saying the visit is an act of provocation.
We want to solemnly warn the American side to immediately halt the provocative acts and stop all destructive action that will further escalate tension across the Taiwan Strait.
Right after the defense ministry's reaction on Tuesday, China's military announced that it was conducting a combat readiness patrol in the direction of the Taiwan Strait. It said the move was aimed at the wrong words and actions of relevant countries over Taiwan. Beijing has repeatedly warned Washington against sending officials or having formal contact with Taiwan. This is a sensitive territorial issue for Beijing and a major bone of contention in its relations with the White House. Canada's dark past keeps haunting the nation, with a new search now getting started for more unmarked graves at a former residential school. Indigenous community leaders and survivors are leading the search at an institute near Toronto. For 85 years, a residential school enrolled between 90 and 200 students each year. This is one of dozens of investigations underway to uncover the full scope of physical and sexual abuses committed against children in those schools. The residential school system was meant to forcibly assimilate the indigenous people. Earlier this year, more than 1,200 unmarked graves were unearthed. A truth commission found that over 4,000 students died of malnutrition, disease, and suicide in those schools, calling it, quote, cultural genocide. A U.S. judge has ruled that a congressional committee probing the January attack in the Capitol building should be given access to the White House records from the Trump administration. The former president has been trying to block access to those records, but the ruling now means that the House Select Committee can obtain phone records, visitor logs, and other documents. The probe is seeking to find out if Trump had prior knowledge of the attack. The former president's lawyers argue that the White House communications are covered by executive privilege, meaning they must be kept confidential. A large number of Trump supporters stormed the Capitol on January the 6th this year as the Congress was meeting to certify Joe Biden's election victory. Five people died in the violence, including a senior police officer. And in Bolivia, police and anti-government protesters have engaged in scuffles over a law critics say is a government trick to seize private property. Clashes happened in the cities of Potosi, Santa Cruz, and Tarija. Riot police fired tear gas and used water cannons to disperse the crowds. The protesters threw objects at the police and vandalized their cars. A number of people are under arrest. The opposition is accusing the government of President Luis Arce using laws and the justice system set to centralize power and crack down on dissent. Arce's party, however, says those allegations are not true, that the opposition is leading a coup against the president. The FBI is accused of practicing religious discrimination for its espionage activities against Muslims over the past two decades. Three Muslim plaintiffs have alleged in a lawsuit that their privacy has been violated for years only because of their religion. The U.S. federal agency denies the charge but refuses to provide any corroborative evidence, either citing national security concerns.
The United States Federal Bureau of Investigation is taken to court over a lawsuit by three Muslim men that alleges the agency illegally conducted surveillance on them on the basis of their religion. Sheikh Yasir Fazaga, Ali Malik, and Yasser Abdulrahim, the three plaintiffs in the case, argue that the U.S. government has for years invoked national security to escape accountability over its unconstitutional surveillance operations and deny them the chance to present their evidence to the court. Initially filed in 2011, their case was first dismissed by a lower court in favor of the FBI's assertion that allowing it to move forward would pose a national security risk. The trio appealed the ruling, and a federal appeals court later sided with them, paving the way for the case to land in the high court. The FBI recruited a paid informant to spy on the mosque and other places of worship in the area beginning in 2006. The informant, identified as Craig Monte, had presented himself as a person who wanted to convert to Islam.
They've always, tried to label Muslims as potential terrorists and investigate them, monitor them, looking in, all their, most of their privacy has been breached. All these mosques, as we can read and study about, is pretty much, it's open to the FBI to, send in informants, spies, make them feel very uncomfortable, and also a lot of them are saying that they feel like second-class citizens or third-class citizens inside their own country.
Fazaga, the lead plaintiff in the case who was also a therapist, said he was furious when he found out that the FBI informant secretly recorded the personal and confidential sessions he had with his patients for a month.
According to the FBI data, hate crimes against Muslims in the U.S. increased dramatically following the 9/11 attacks in 2001. It shows hate crimes against Muslims spiked 500% between 2000 and 2009. The figure has remained high ever since. The measures the U.S. government took, like the adoption of the so-called Patriot Act, have made matters even worse for the community. 20 years later, activists say Muslim Americans continue to see the violation of their both civil and constitutional rights.
The surveillance operation in Southern California was part of a broader spying program that the U.S. government enforced after 9/11, using various tactics to monitor Muslim communities in the name of national security.
This is a systematic problem for the U.S., and they want it to be this way. It's been programmed like this by the U.S. It's because they want to install fear in American citizens everywhere, so they can also justify invasions to Muslim countries and to, invade different Muslim countries.
The Supreme Court is expected to issue its ruling on the Muslims' case by the end of June. Lawyers for the government will argue that the case should be dismissed, as letting it proceed would expose clandestine intelligence operations and harm national security. The FBI has long contended that the information about its informants, methods of surveillance, and who they are monitoring and why should be treated as state secrets. Human rights activists, however, say citing national security concerns is an excuse to avoid admitting that they target people based on their religion. The plaintiffs argue that under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, known as FISA, a judge can review the material and order that it be disclosed. They contend that in a case like theirs, the 1978 law supersedes the state secrets privilege, which was adopted by the Supreme Court in the 1950s. Government lawyers' counterargument is that FISA was not meant for a case where the government certifies that the disclosure would jeopardize national security.
Not all the mosques or all the Muslims are strong enough to file cases and to go head on with the FBI because, the FBIs have their own tactics.
All eyes are on the Supreme Court justices whose ruling will indicate whether they are willing to protect religious freedoms or if the government has the authority to cover up its illegal activities in the name of national security.
The number of refugees arriving in Italy has picked up again after the pandemic caused a sharp drop in migration flows to Europe in 2020. Italian authorities have said refugee arrivals have almost doubled since January compared to the same time last year. That's a wrap for now.
Range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Oh, hey, hello there. To be honest, I was thinking about what the director said today. It was a challenge. He asked me to name one thing in the studio that is not made of any mineral source, such as oil or metals. Believe me, nothing came to mind. You're right there. One of today's topics is mines and mineral products in Iran. Iranians are lucky to live in a land with really rich mines.
They have access to most mineral rocks, actually. Iran is the world's 17th largest country. It covers 1% of all landmass on the planet. Iranian soil happens to be located on Earth's metallurgical belt. That is a belt rich in minerals, all of which the modern world has great need for. Copper, gold, iron, lead, and zinc are but small examples. Even so, there's been minimal investment in exploration in Iran, and so this country is not aware of its full potential. For example, Iran is estimated to possess 7% of the world's resources, but in 2015, of $9 billion worth of exploration, Iran's share was just $25 million. That's just 0.3%. Therefore, investment in this sector would be highly profitable to foreign companies. Iranians themselves haven't sat back idly either. They've invested extensively in the mine sector. For a close-up view of what Iranians have done in this regard, we set out for an industrial complex to watch their production process from A to Z. And to begin with, what could be better than copper? Copper has the best electrical conductivity of all metals except for silver. And the world of telecommunications is based upon a copper infrastructure.
From your everyday clothes to the plate of your food, from the car you drive to the screen on which you are watching this program, everything you are in one way or another in contact within your everyday life has something to do with minerals. Mines have in fact shaped expansion of human civilization. Meanwhile, countries richer in mineral resources and more technologically developed to extract minerals from deposits are apt to see more progress. Hearing the name of Iran in economic communities would generally remind one of oil and gas. It is true that the country sits atop at least 10% of the world's proven crude oil and nearly 18% of gas reserves. However, there might be relatively very few who know that the same Iran is in possession of 7% of the mineral deposits worldwide as well. Copper is one of the most profitable minerals in Iran that is widely used in many countries. Given its preferred conductivity, copper is used in nearly all categories of electrical engines and wiring. It is also used for construction of ships and pipes to prevent calcium and lime buildup. Copper and its alloys are natural antimicrobial materials and are used in many medicinal preparations, among other uses. This is Ahmad Morad Alizadeh. He used to manage National Iranian Copper Industries Company. This company owns three big mines in two provinces of Kerman and East Azerbaijan. It is the third most profitable company in Iran's stock exchange market. After 1.5 hours' drive from central Kerman, we arrived in Sarcheshme, where these huge holes were once big mountains, having been dug out over time. One of Iran's biggest copper mines is located in Sarcheshme, 159 kilometers south of the southern city of Kerman. Sarcheshme is considered to hold the 15th biggest copper deposits worldwide. By itself, Kerman province is viewed as one of the richest regions in Iran for its mineral reserves.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed the show so far and found it educational. Our tour of Sarcheshme city and its grand factory is not over yet. but I'd best give you this information right here, right now. You may not see Iran listed among the world's top 10 richest countries in copper, but Iran enjoys special privileges in this domain. First of all, Iranian copper is really highly concentrated. Secondly, Iran has mines that are either untouched or not yet expanded. Given copper is expensive in world markets and Iran offers attractive conditions to investors, Iranian mines would be the best investment option.
After exploration is done, they will blast the mine to start excavation. Workers will transfer the rich soil to the factory. Here, in these machines, the soil will be crushed until it is broken down to 80 micron grains. Then, using flotation method, waste is separated. These scary furnaces make copper anodes. Now, pure copper is almost in the reach. Anodes are then moved to refineries, and using electrolysis method, they'll be transformed into cathode, which is 99.99% pure copper. Iran's revenues from the sale of copper have dwindled in recent years due to the weak demand from top copper consumer China, thanks to an economic slowdown in the country. Although Trump's biting sanctions are back on track, this company is planning to produce 540,000 tons of copper in the near future. The country is planning to lure foreign investors into the sector, however. Investment data shows that a sizable majority of investments offered by foreign financiers in Iran since January 2016 that Tehran's Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, was implemented were aimed at capitalizing projects in the mining sector. Development of the sector would not only lead to faster economic growth in Iran, but would also tackle unemployment. In order to facilitate the arrival of foreign investors into the country and addressing their concerns, the Organization for Investment, Economic and Technical Assistance of Iran, an affiliate to the Ministry of Economy, has been established to play an instrumental role in this regard. For more information on the ins and outs of investing in Iran, check www.investiniran.ir.
Copper is but one of Iran's mineral industries. Another Iranian produce is iron, plenty of which is to be found on this land. Just one example is the iron mine of Golgohar City, where over 1 billion and 250 million tons of iron ore lie dormant. This mine is in southern Iran and has a long way to go before exhaustion. Eastern Iran also has its riches. There lies the Sangam mine, with over 850 million tons of iron ore waiting to be extracted. We'll visit these mines in future shows. Be you rich or poor, busy exploring new mines or new galaxies, you can do nothing without hydrocarbons, vitamins, and proteins. To provide food for 7 billion people is no easy task. Given such vast population, human life today would be not possible without the food industry or food factories. Iran has 82 million people, a number not easy to feed. The Iranian food industry is really vast, and it produces and exports nearly every type of halal food popular in the Middle East. If you, like me, had to waste 2 hours a day in the traffic, you wouldn't find 2 hours time for cooking a meal. So do forgive me for opting for ready meals. There are plenty of Iranian factories producing the ready meals that are so popular in today's world. But there are also those factories producing traditional Iranian food packaged to go with modern methods. Quality standards really matter with these products because such food may go unconsumed for days and weeks, in which time they must not lose quality or taste. On the other hand, they must not produce poisons harmful to the buyer. I've said plenty, but only to prepare you for a report by my dear friend Amir Mehdi Kazemi.
inseparable part of every friendly gathering and birthday party in Iran. A cold hors d'oeuvre which many Iranians prefer as a main course. For decades, the old Russian potato salad, also known as Olivier salad in Iran, has gathered families and friends around one table. However, in the mid-90s, this tasty darling of the Iranians suddenly vanished from restaurants and sandwich shops across the country, after sales were banned by authorities due to hygiene concerns. But soon after, two close friends came up with a brilliant idea, and that was to get a legal license for the mass production of Olivier salad with all the health certificates. Entrepreneurs say that ideas belong to those who execute them, and this is a good example of how combining the simplest materials along with proper planning could turn into a booming business, targeting a market with more than 80 million potential consumers. Nomino headquarters and main production facility is near Isfahan City. It is where the finest ingredients like potatoes, chicken, carrots, and mayonnaise are combined to prepare the most highly demanded Olivier salad in the entire country. The products are various, ranging from chicken and bologna salad to club sandwiches, rolls, and sausages. Nearly all machineries here are customized for the mass production of Russian potato salad and other cold meals. Observing the strictest health and food safety standards becomes even more difficult when it comes to mass producing foods which are made with fresh ingredients and served cold on the platter. And that seems to be the biggest challenge for the quality control department, whose task is to make sure that everything from flavor to hygiene goes perfectly well from point A to the end user. Iranians are a nation with a big appetite. Like other parts of the world, people have their preferences when it comes to food. Consumers could become very picky in a country with endless flavor choices. Nomino produces all the ingredients used in the manufacturing process. The company even supervises the cultivation process of potatoes and carrots to make sure that they are exactly what is needed by the factory. Experts say that Iran is standing at a very good position when it comes to the quantity, the quality, and diversity of both agricultural and dairy products. And this has created a lucrative market for both investors and entrepreneurs. Today, Iranian consumers are faced with new packagings, new brands, new products, and higher standards every day. And those who once considered themselves as small business owners are now introducing themselves as food giants who are looking for markets outside the borders of the country. Partners who once started from scratch now recruit a considerable number of people in their factories across the country. They also export food products to countries like the UAE, Oman, Qatar, Iraq, Afghanistan, Armenia, and Georgia, and there are hopes to create more demand in those markets. Today, Nomino is a familiar name across Iran. The two friends who once joined hands and followed their dream to turn a tiny business into a big one created one of the most famous success stories among Iranian entrepreneurs. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Bazaar.
Thank you, Amir Mehdi, for the report on Nomino.
Fats and oils have been around for a millennia. Historically, they have been seen as a source of dietary energy used to preserve foods or just for general cooking and baking.
Vegetable oils are known for their numerous health benefits as they carry vital nutrients. They are essential for growth, metabolism, and protecting brain cells, among others. However, consuming too much edible oil brings about a whole host of health risks. Some oils have become available only recently as extraction technology has improved. The advancement of this industry has been contingent on science and research.
This week, we want to give center stage to vegetable oil production in the country. We wanted to see how this product is made in order to get a better understanding of how its market operates. We will also be checking out why edible oil is such a key ingredient in the national economy. Okay, enough said. Time to walk through today's greasy bazaar.
Our journey took us to the ancient city of Rey, near the capital Tehran. Here, we visited a company that was one of the first producers of vegetable oil in the country. Margarine was first established in 1954, but its edible oil production activity took off in 1995. It is a major producer of a variety of items under the brand names of Aftab and Khurus. Its mega facilities have the capacity to produce edible oils for the food industry as well as household consumption. Productions at this company are so high that it holds at least 15% of the domestic edible oil market. It is also an active participant in the Tehran Stock Exchange. One of the competitive advantages of this company is its diverse product list, from extra virgin olive oil, sesame oil, to sunflower oil and canola oil. This company has it all. The goods here are produced under Iran's strict Food and Drug Administration standards in order to ensure its products maintain the highest quality. This company has received several national and international certifications for food safety and quality, including the Halal certification. One feature that sets this company apart from other producers in this sector is that it mainly produces raw or unprocessed oil. This is later refined into other products that are released into the market.
There are two main ways that plant matter is processed to make raw vegetable oil. One is through hydrogenation and the other is through a process called fractioning. In a nutshell, this type of processing includes controlled cooling leading to partial crystallization. The remaining liquid is then separated from the solid by a filtration process. And for all these steps, large equipment is required for mass production.
This company recently launched two new facilities for oil fractioning and hydrogenation. These facilities will increase its unprocessed oil productions, which can be sold to various industries for non-consumable purposes. Some of the customers of this raw material are cleaning products and cosmetics manufacturers. The new production lines allow it to branch out into other sectors supplying raw oil, which is currently largely imported. As part of its development agenda, this company has also overhauled its operation systems, including human resources. This includes growth opportunities for the hundreds of people working in this company. But that's not all. It also restructured its internal processes, which has helped increase production with efficiency. It might be interesting to know that most of the equipment in the vegetable oil industry are imported. This company also imports a lot of its production machinery, as well as some of its raw material, such as oil seeds. Over the years, this producer has pulled through numerous challenges in order to enjoy its many achievements today. One obstacle that remained throughout the years has been the economic sanctions imposed by the US, which hinders international money transfers and banking.
The World Health Organization puts Iran's per capita vegetable oil consumption at 7 kilograms higher than the global average. In more general terms, the monthly domestic demand is roughly 150,000 tons. That's pretty high, but with such a large demand, the country's edible oil sector is still heavily dependent on raw material imports. Dear oh dear, much too much happening here. So, how is the country managing these needs?
Based on data from Iran's Customs Administration, last year, over 2 million tons of oil seeds were imported into the country. Meanwhile, edible oil productions reached around 1.6 million tons, according to the Ministry of Industry. This is actually below domestic demand, which industry participants put at around 1.8 million tons annually. Iran does cultivate oil seeds domestically. These crops are mainly grown in the south and southwest of the country, such as Fars and Hormozgan provinces. In 2019, with the ample seasonal rains, over 100,000 tons of rapeseed were harvested in these areas. Other crops, such as cottonseed and sesame seeds, are also farmed in the country. However, these cultivations are not enough, and around 90% of the country's raw material needed for vegetable oil productions is imported. In order to meet these needs, the Ministry of Agriculture launched a plan called the Oilseed Project in 2017. The project is a joint technical cooperation with the Food and Agriculture Organization, also known by the acronym FAO of the United Nations. The goal is to build oilseed production capacities in the public and private sectors using sustainable farming methods. Ministry officials say productions have increased under this plan. This year, productions of soybeans, sunflower, and rapeseed increased by threefold.
As you probably know, vegetable oil is a key ingredient in many foods, and the food industry is a major consumer of this product. It is used in homes, restaurants, and fast food joints. The food industry is worth billions and is growing at a rapid pace these days. And for those who want to enter this sector, it offers a world of opportunities. Plus, it's all tasty stuff. Yum, yum.
The food industry is the most important part of the economy, accounting for over 20% of Iran's non-oil revenues. That's according to Iran's Customs Administration. This industry is also almost entirely privately owned. Based on statistics from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, this sector holds around 15% of the country's industrial employment. Nearly $900 million worth of agricultural and food products were exported in the first 2 months of this year alone. This is a dramatic rise when compared to the total value of exports for the entire year of 2019, which stood at the same value. Dairy products, sweets, poultry, and aquaculture, as well as a diverse range of agricultural products, are some of the main items exported this year. But Iran's food and beverage industry isn't just limited to the activity of eating. It's an industry full of flavor, but also bursting with investment opportunities. This industry covers a range of areas, including food technology, product development, and packaging. There is also a whole field for research and design, with a particular demand for engineers in equipment development, and so much more.
Till next week, when we'll introduce you to other Iranian products, goodbye and God be with you.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
Humanity. الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at Amir al-Mu'mineen wa Sayyid al-Muwahideen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salamullah, the commander of the faithful, and how he tried to establish justice and equality and fairness amongst people, which he did. We were talking about in other episodes how he tried first and foremost to elevate the logic and understanding of people themselves when it comes to terms like pride and honor, because these are the things that makes people differentiate themselves or put themselves on top of others. Is that the inner workings of the human being, that he always thinks that he's not equal to other people, which, as we saw in the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen, he says, no, you're all the same. You're all from Adam. Adam from was mud. You're all from mud. So there is no difference between you and them. So when he tries to educate people in terms of pride and feeling that we are better than people, he says, in fact, that eliminates and that takes away the human identity from society. If I try to have pride myself and try to give myself honor in society, then he says this is kind of a way that makes society lose its true essence and its true identity, which is to be fair and just and equal to everyone else. He says in one of his sayings, اطفئوا ما كان في قلوبكم من نيران العصبية. He says, extinguish the fires that you have in your hearts when it comes to having that nationality and pride in yourselves, first and foremost. So don't think because you come from a country, you come from a place that is more better than the rest. As we can see today, we have a classification of second world country, third world country. He says at the end, you're all the same. So that fire that you have in your heart, make sure it gets extinguished. Then he says, وَأَحْقَادُ الْجَاهِلِيَّةِ, the hatred of the paganism. And paganism existed before and it still exists now. So when we say paganism, those who are idol worshippers, we worship idols of our own these days. And our idols, sometimes not necessarily a statue, but could be an idea, an ideology that we hold and that we try to bring forward. And then he says, وَأْتَمِدُوا وَضْءَ التَّدَلِّلِ عَلَى رُؤُوسِكُمْ, try to humiliate yourself and make it the crown on your head, that you need to be humble before others, not pride, not to be proud and feel they are better than the rest. That's how he, alayhi salam, tries to seize it. And then he says, وَلْقُوا التَّعَزُّزَ تَحْتَ أَقْدَامِكُمْ وَخَلْءَ التَّكَبُّرِ عَنْ أَعْنَاقِكُمْ. You know, because sometimes when we, especially in our societies these days, when people point to us and call us by names and by titles, we feel honored for some reason. We give ourselves the honor that doesn't even exist, that just is an illusion. And so he said, that take it and put it under your feet, right? And he says, when it comes to pride, it's like a chain on your necks. Take it off. So he emphasizes so much on trying to get me and you to be as humane as possible and not to make sure that we take away the human identity from ourselves by putting illusions in our minds. Let us take a short break and then inshallah we continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. What we were saying just before the break, that Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullahi alayhi was trying to get people to reformat and rethink all the values, or all the values that they have installed in their heads when it comes to pride, nationality, and honor, and all these things that they use either consciously or subconsciously to differentiate themselves from other human beings. So he says, try not to do that. And when we look at his words, we can see that very evident and very clear. When he talks about the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, for example, and he looks at how people were at the time of the Prophet when they came, which is not much difference from our time currently. He says, Ba'athahu wa nasu fi hayratin. He sent him, and people were, you know, not sure. They were in doubts. They don't know where to go. And fitnatin, and there were a lot of sedation between them. And he says, wa kibriya, and they had pride. And then he says, and jahl, and ignorance. So the mind of the human being was so corrupted to the extent that they were unaware of what they're doing. And he says this unawareness and this ignorance that they were living was actually the source of all the crimes that happened in society. Because especially if you look at the paganism or pagans back in the day, and you see the crimes and the genocide they used to do towards one another, is unheard of. But thank God today, with modern technology, that we can read and see that human beings today, they have committed and still committing crimes that are more heinous than those that were committed at the time of pagans and before the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi. So again, here he's trying to look at the mind of the people, and he tries to educate them in a way where they could get rid of all these concepts that might lead them to hurt, harm, and take the rights of one another. He even, for example, he says when it comes to committing sins with people and thinking that you are better than others or taking the right of others, he says it stems from three things: al-hirs, wal-kibar, wal-hasad, that greediness and pride and jealousy. These three things act as motives for the human being to come and take the right of other people. When a person is greedy, obviously it makes no difference to him where he takes the rights of other people or not. Well, in fact, because he's greedy, obviously he will take their rights. And so with pride, and so with jealousy. Jealousy, maybe he can't take it physically, but at least he can, you know, think about it and keep it in his mind and talk about it and say, why is he having this and why is she having that? And he wishes and prays that people lose what they have. So the source of corruption in society and the loss of equality and fairness in society is basically stemmed from the egoistic notion that we have within ourselves. Unless we try to fix it from within us, we will get nowhere. Amir al-Mu'mineen, he worked so hard on himself that he managed to establish such justice and equality on earth, unlike those who preceded him and those who were after him. We'll leave it here, and then inshallah we continue in episodes to come. So until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What you heard was an IRIB English Radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.